This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Nisha Momin, class of 2021, and a McMullen student ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to our first installation of four episodes on the Indian Ocean Current Six Artistic Narratives exhibition. This episode features Professors Laura Hake and Heather Ollins of the Biology Department. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
My name is Laura Hake. I'm an associate professor in the biology department. I've been at BC since 1997. My research for several decades was in trying to understand how information is used in a frog egg, is stored so that when the egg is fertilized, development can happen really quickly. And that is all about how growth and cell division is regulated. So it's very related to, feeds into our understanding of cell regulation in all organisms. So it's has kind of a cancer, connection. So I was funded through various organizations that were funding cancer research and basic cell regulation research. I started shifting that scholarship focus probably in, it was probably around 2010, actually, and became very interested in understanding how pollutants in our environment mimic hormones. And this is actually is related to what I was studying in eggs, because what happens inside the cell is kind of similar with the way a pollutant interacts with molecules that are already in the cell. And the bottom line is I got very interested in studying things like bisphenol A or BPA, which is in hard plastic water bottles, and it actually mimics the hormone estrogen, and that BPA acts through the signaling pathways for estrogen in a biological system and messes things up because it's not the real hormone and it's not acting at the right time. So bottom line is it causes a lot of problems for developing animals and developing humans, and it has a big effect on human reproductive capacity, basically. And there are a lot of chemicals like that out there in the world. So I learn about how they're working on a molecular level, that from what I talked about earlier, you might realize that, as my husband says, I study things that are invisible, but on a molecular level inside cells. But I also became very interested in thinking about, how we as a culture need to be paying attention and understand what's happening and recognize how we can start to change things and start to help other people, like in regulatory positions, pay more attention and pay attention to the science. So I essentially became just very passionate about teaching about these kinds of things and talking with my students about the dangers, what's going on the biological level. So I actually teach an upper division course called Environmental Disruptors of Development, which is pretty much all seniors. I've got about 30 seniors in that class this semester. And we dig into the primary literature, about five papers, really deep dive into the molecular mechanisms of how various chemicals are messing us up and messing up animals. But we also take a very, very specific focus on issues of environmental racism, actually, within the class, and spend probably half of our class time looking at stories from around the world that have as their focus some kind of environmental pollutant or chemical that is harming humans or animals. And we talk about, the biology of what's happening, but really very much every week is a focus on who's being disproportionately affected by this. People that are in situations where the only things they can really afford are going to the dollar store. And the dollar store has an enormous amount of plastic stuff that is filled with plasticizers that mimic and antagonize the function of testosterone in the body and mimic estrogen. So there's a real interconnection there. And kind of what I found along the way in my heart in developing this course and talking with students is that I really am committed to helping students learn, but also find what they're really curious about in life and what their questions are in their heart. I don't want to use the word passion because I think that's overused, but just start with what you're curious about and follow that and realize that you can connect what moves you here with your intellect. You know, we're so stuck up here in our society that we just kind of drop it down and realize you can connect those things. And you can have a career where those parts of you are interconnected. And I also teach a course, I teach intro bio, I teach developmental biology, which is an intermediate level course, and I also teach a non-majors natural science course called Sustaining the Biosphere. And that course is explicitly geared to helping students understand that they are of Earth. We evolved here. We can never be separated for any time, any amount of time from Earth and survive because we are that interconnected. So I want to help students see that so they can fall in love. And when you love, you care and you act. And so Sustaining the Biosphere helps students get to that point. And we also have a lot of writing and personal reflection on who we are, how we are interconnected, our interrelationship with others. And so there's a lot of journaling in the class. And we also spend a lot of time talking about what we can do, you know, and looking at examples of how people are creating a life-sustaining society that we can move into. People are moving into away from what, you know, the path humanity, and in particular American culture, has been on of, you know, just use it and throw it away. But we need to be much more conscious of our interconnection and live into that. And we can. It's possible. So, and with hope.
There's a lot there. It's hard to shift gears and start talking about myself now. I was very engaged in that, Laura. Okay. I'm Heather Olens. I am an assistant professor of the practice, also in the bio department. I'm in my scientific brain, I'm a microbial ecologist, so I study microscopic organisms and the way that they influence and are influenced by their environment. A lot of my research has focused on microbial communities at deep sea hydrothermal vents, so underwater hot springs, but really I'm interested also in the role that these microscopic organisms play in freshwater wetland ecosystems. So there's a lot of freshwater wetlands walking distance from campus that I've started to study with some undergrads in one of my lab classes. And I'm really interested in the role that these microbes play in global carbon cycles. So many of them produce methane, many of them consume methane, but we really don't know what they're doing in these local small freshwater wetlands. I teach one of the intro classes, Ecology and Evolution. I teach a deep sea biology upper level elective and some other upper level electives related to microbial ecology. And next semester, I'm teaching a new complex problems course called Understanding and Protecting Our Oceans in the Wake of Climate Change. So that'll be my first time teaching a non-majors course. And I'm really looking forward to diving into, pun intended, diving into the human ocean relationship. And I'm thinking that there might be some ways that this exhibit could be, I haven't figured out how yet, but I'm thinking that you know, with the focus on this, the way that humans relate to and have related to the ocean, we need, you know, some other types of media, such as some of the pieces in this exhibit, could find their way into that class. Okay, so we are going to be talking about a couple of the Pennysiopsis, I hope I'm saying that right, pieces in the Warm Water collection. They're a series of paintings, I assume. I'm not an art person, so this is a new kind of conversation for me, but they're made using glue, ink, and oil on paper. And I was particularly drawn to Warm Water number 8. On the right side of the image, you see like lighter blues with these dark blue dots and some orange color texture. And then the left side seems to get darker and darker, that obscures any of those textural details that might be there. To me, this really looks like the transition between a shallow coastal sea and a steep drop off into the deep sea. You know, we know a lot about shallow coastal seas, and we know relatively little about the deep sea. And that there's so much detail on the right side and the left side less so. So that stuck out to me. And then in the middle of the image, almost perched over what sort of looks like a cliff, there are these two very dark shapes that to me appear to be people. At first, it looked like a mother and child, and as I look more at it, maybe it looks like one child, and the second shape might be a baby, might be something else. There's little bright patches in the middle that to me look like eyes. And so that's the Warm Water number 8 by Pennysiopsis.
I look at this and I try to notice where I'm kind of feeling it. It's kind of back of my heart and chest, and it feels comforting to me, this one, actually. And there's something calming for me about the way the blues kind of just kind of melt into one another and get to that deeper place. And then the two kind of figures, I mean, it's impossible to not think of them as, you know, living beings that, you know, they've either found one another or they're simply dear to one another.
Yeah. The eyes to me, the one that looks like maybe there's two eyes, you can almost imagine the expression that you can't see on the face. And to me, obviously, I'm probably reading a lot into this, but it's sort of like, what's going to happen, right? It's not hopeful, not scared, but there seems to be this something about the position of what looks like eyes to me. It's like that person is waiting for something.
Like expectation.
Yes. Yeah, maybe. That's the right word.
Yeah.
And I love the color and texture on the right-hand side. Right there in the bottom right corner, there's that darker spot that just reminds me of like a little tide pool, which to me is my happy place in the world. And then as you go up towards the top right corner, I don't know, something about that black and gray almost feels more like you're going on land. And the orange, I don't know what the orange makes me feel, but it's such a nice contrast that it really adds texture and depth to the piece.
I was just thinking about the way the colors in that side are just so pleasing. Very, very pleasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit of green.
Yeah, that peachy, orangey color. Yeah, really quite comforting. And,
you know, the idea of glue and ink and oil, I'm struggling to find the words to describe the shapes. Right, but there's so much different texture, like in like the sort of middle right side where the orange almost looks like sponge painting is the wrong word, but that's so different than the sharp edges of the darker blue dots at the bottom, and then the sort of soft edges of the what looks to me like the cliff in the middle.
Yeah, so one that I really resonated with me was slide number 75, Heather, Warm Waters 17. And this, I have to say, it affects me in a way that's kind of different than that previous painting. It's, you know, that human form is so, you know, erect and really actually beautiful, you know, that the proportions and just that grace, and it's kind of stepping forward, but it seems, it to me, it feels like the situation that being is in is a little, is kind of scary or charged, I think. Charged, like even like electrical charge or something that, and it seems like it's pushing against. So is it encased in this or is it emerging from that? And yeah, and the black and stuff down near the bottom, I mean, that feels to me, it kind of looks like oil, like black oil to me, which, you know, brings up the whole fear and worry about, you know, the toxicity of oil and all the various things that are in it and how it harms living bodies. And you know, it was never meant for us to be in constant contact with, but also all of the ramifications of fossil fuel extraction.
Yeah. And if the yellow is some sort of energy coming off of the red body, then is the black absorbing that or blocking it or something? It's hard to, it definitely feels like the figure is maybe pushing through a wall or trying to push through the wall, and you can't tell whether that's a good thing or not. As we were sort of talking about which piece to pick, so many of these pieces have really interesting human, a figure in some sort of sea of color and shape and texture. And each one clearly brings up different feelings. I have not yet used art in any of my classes, but I certainly think that I could, right? Like, it seems to me these pieces in particular, the warm waters, any of the warm water ones, but especially the ones that have something that appears to be a person or people in there. The non-majors class I'm teaching next semester is all about interrogating this human ocean relationship. And so I'm wondering if I could have students pick one of these and describe it, describe what they see in it, and then try and make some connection with one of the themes that we've talked about in class.
Yeah, I also can really see doing something similar to that with my students. And I kind of can see myself using this in a couple of different classes, my endocrine disruptor class, because, you know, when I look at some of these, in particular, the first warm waters one, warm waters 3, that one kind of makes, I stand back from that one, because to me, it's like there are these blue, black, yeah, and not healthy or safe blobs all over, you know, coming and obscuring the person, yeah, and their landscape and where they live. And I see it as poison.
Yeah, that number 3 is intense. There's, you know, even the red background, you know, something feels urgent or, you know, fiery or, you know, there's something about it. To me, the only part of this where there's like calm or peace is the blue background, you know, very at the very top of the page.
And even the person's facial features are like smudged out.
Yeah, and that what maybe are hands also, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but they're in this like, you know, closed around their body. It's kind of, and so for my endocrine disruptor class, I can see easily getting into this and saying, you know, just thinking about our topics, you know, how do you what stands out to, you know, what strikes you, you know, as you go through this exhibit. And my biosphere class, you know, I would ask them, you know, where do they see evidence of interconnection here through this exhibit? And just maybe even just keep it that's where do you see evidence of interconnection? That's it. You know.
Part of the reason we initially chose this group of paintings was we were both, I think, really drawn to the colors, and there was so much beauty as you just sort of scrolled through in the colors themselves. But then I think as we started looking more closely at, I don't know, maybe not most of them, if not all of them, there is more complex feelings and more, you know, some, whether it's anxiety or fear or something that seems toxic or whatever it is, urgency, it's all, like the color scheme is almost misleadingly upbeat and happy and joyful. And so I think there's a lot of potential there for students to look at these as a group and be drawn to one or another. And I like the way you said you would just sort of leave it open, because I think that's a really effective way to just have like a very simple prompt and then just see where students go with it. And as a way of getting them, you know, you were talking in the intro about head versus heart, right? As a way, just giving students a different way of thinking about the material that maybe would get them out of their heads a little bit.
One thing I talk about with all my classes, actually, and bring it in different ways, is pausing to notice what their feelings are. And in my, you know, even upper division classes, I intentionally make space in class for students to reflect. And I'll have assignments, you know, reflect on, how did you feel when you read this particular set of stories about this, you know, chemical plant in Fredericksburg, West Virginia? And of course, they look at me like, yeah, we heard Professor Hake was weird, you know. But then one student tell me, or in evaluations, the end of the semester evaluations, she's kind of weird, but you get used to it.
But, and it's, you know, it's, there's, I think that I've started doing more of that reflection type stuff in different classes. I shouldn't say stuff, exercises. And I think it doesn't happen all that often in science classes. I think it's really easy to see a science class as head only, right? These are the things that you need to learn. This is the processes you need to understand. But when we're talking about scientific phenomena that are so closely tied with climate change, with racial justice, with pollution, to any of these sort of big existential things that we're dealing with, science has showed us that the head and facts don't change people's minds, right? So if we actually want to get our students to care about these things, or if we want to give our students the tools to help other people care about these things, communicate more, you know, I think we as science faculty need to be a little more weird, maybe, right? And give students the chance to think about things differently.
I explained that, you know, we are biological beings. And if we didn't need emotion or feeling, we would have lost those capabilities through the course of evolution, right? If feelings were unnecessary for our thriving, they'd be gone. So what are we doing? Ignoring the fact that, you know, this story is going to make you feel something.
Yeah. I guess one thing that I didn't mention in the introduction is that I think a lot about science communication, right? How can scientists do a better job communicating their science? And the more I read about that, the more I learn about that, the more I do it, the more I teach it. Story is such an important part of any type of communication, but I think that is often left out of science communication. And if pieces of physical art can help us bring more story into our classes, I think there's a lot of potential there.
Well, I really appreciate that point, the scientific, bringing up the scientific communication aspect of it, because that's where that's what we need, right? We need people that can explain what's happening. You know, science is an evidence-based discipline. You know, you do experiments, you test things, and you observe what's happening. And it's based in reality, right? You know, the physical evidence of it. And we need people that can explain that to people that haven't had that much education in understanding the scientific process and what scientists go through to do things. And for my endocrine disruptor course, I used to have students do like, for the end of the semester project, you know, like a research paper where they'd have a topic and, you know, they do this literature search and they talk about this topic and everything. And they did great jobs, but I realized, you know, I was the only one that read them. And then they were there in my, well, on my computer now. And it was just kind of like, eh. But as I got more and more into it over the years, I realized, you know, what would really be, what's really important is to give students a chance to really, through the course of the semester, find something that really gets them, you know, tugs on them, and then to help support them to develop what the final project now is called a persuasion paper, where the student defines a problem, an issue that they want to address, an audience that they want to convince to change something, and then like a venue, like is it going to be a magazine article? Is it going to be testimony before a House subcommittee? Is it going to be at a PTA meeting? Is it going to be a letter to your cousin who just had a baby? It can be anything. And it's so wide open, but there's a lot. We just take our time, a lot of reflection, a lot of coaching and helping them find their voice, their audience, and do this connection. And it works.
And now we have totally moved away from the pieces of art. But I think we both agree that there is a lot of potential for bringing in art like this into a variety of science classes, right? And that our own teaching, but I think communication, science communication more broadly, can be enriched through the use of art or other modes of communicating besides just facts. And I keep coming back to what you said about getting your students to get out of their heads or finding what tugs on them. I think the more that we as educators can do that, the more memorable our classes will be for our students, the more changed our students will be from the experience they had in our class, not because of anything we necessarily did as teachers other than give them the space to connect with that part of themselves. In particular, this group of paintings, this warm water group of paintings, there's so many of them that I keep thinking of ways that students could maybe just find the one that tugs on them the most, and then there's a lot of different ways we could go from there. So after this conversation, I think I'm more convinced than I was before that I might try and use this in my course next semester.
That concludes this episode of Art in Focus. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the McMullen Student Publications page, to find more episodes in the series. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the McMullen Graduate Assistant and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Nisha Momin, class of 2021. And thank you to Rachel Chamberlain, the McMullen Manager of Education, and Megan Minahan, class of 2022, who lent production support. And finally, to our Publications Committee, who uploaded these videos on The Terrace.